Welcome to Everything Life Coaching. I'm John Kim.
And I'm Noelle Cordeau. We are the founders of Lumia.
And we're super passionate about all things coaching, and we want to share what we've learned from over a decade of coaching and training thousands of life coaches.
Let's dive into the science and magic of coaching.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Everything Life Coaching. I am your host, Noelle, and today I have with us a really special guest, Anne-Marie Santamarina, entrepreneur, executive, a Lumia alum, an author, and a connection coach who is bringing skills, training, and awareness around some of the most vital aspects of human connection that are bubbling in our time to corporate spaces. And I can't wait for this conversation. Anne-Marie, thank you so much for being here. How are you?
Hi, Noelle. I am great. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, me too. Me too. So I know you very well over many long and beautiful years. Can you orient our listeners to who you are and a little bit of your backstory? How did we get here? How do we know each other? And let's have it.
Sure. I'd be honored. excuse me. I am a former business owner. Well, I guess I'm still a business owner. I owned a tech company for 20 years. And I had made a decision in 2017, along with my business partner, that we were ready to kind of punt and move on to something else. And so we sold the company in late 2018. And I stayed on with the acquiring company for a while and still am in a very small capacity. I do some consulting for them. But I really felt called to sell the company because I used to use this line all the time that I just wanted some space and time to think. You know, when you own a business, especially a technology support business, there are a lot of things pulling at you. And I just felt that I couldn't, you know, I couldn't really spend the time on the business that I wanted to. And I thought by, you know, becoming part of a bigger company, I would have the opportunity to do that in some capacity. After we sold the business, I was, I actually, a woman that worked for me had mentioned John Kim to me, and I started following him on Instagram. And, you know, The Angry Therapist, which I thought was, you know, quite innovative. And I really enjoyed the perspective that he brought. And he, you know, I had already been working with a coach in, you know, some capacity, but he enlightened me to kind of coaching from his perspective. I liked that, you know, he was a man in the space, and I was, you know, drawn to the things he was talking about. And then I learned that he had a coaching organization with a woman named Noelle Cordeau. And so I was intrigued. So I really didn't know, you know, what my plans were beyond selling the company. I hadn't really gotten that far yet, but I felt called to explore, you know, going to coaching school a little bit further. And so I reached out and I had a, I guess you would call it a clarity call or, you know, a consulting connection. And lo and behold, it was you on the other line, which was a gift to me because hearing from you, your thoughts about coaching and the inspiration behind why you do what you do, I was really like drawn. And again, I didn't fully understand what that was going to unravel into, but I just went with my gut. Like it felt right. And so this was like March of 2019, and I decided on the spot, I'm like, Noelle, I want in, but I don't want to start until September. And you're probably like, okay.
I remember that call.
Yeah, it was amazing. I remember I had to step out in the hallway and like, you know, because I was at work. But I wanted to be with the, you know, I wanted to give myself a year because I can tend to jump into things a little bit. You know, maybe I have that entrepreneurial spirit in me. And I know I can do multiple things at once. But I signed up to start in September of 2019. I remember kind of, you know, so then obviously there was 6 months in between, but I was still following John. I was learning more about Lumia and what you were all doing out in the world. And it was now time to start the cohort. So everybody came on and introduced themselves. And I panicked. I was like, what am I doing here? I don't belong here. Like, I just went into this mode of, just is this really for me? And I could say that, that was just, it was just temporary, right? It was just that moment of kind of like when you're starting something new, what am I doing? And then I was like, it doesn't matter. Like, just go for it. You know, you're inspired by John, you're inspired by Noelle, like just keep showing up and, things will happen. And things absolutely happened. A lot of magic. 20 weeks, right? I think it was a 20 week, back then. So I know everybody probably says this, but our cohort was really special. One of the things I was probably worried about, Noelle, was that I'm old, I was in my 50s and I'm like, who in their 50s like goes to coaching school? Like, what is that? And I was delighted that there was such a diverse representation of, people, ages, backgrounds, just the diversity of the cohort. There were other people. So for those of you that are my age that were in the cohort that might be listening, you're not old, only I am. But I was really pleased and thrilled to see what, a diverse and beautiful group of humans you had all attracted and put into this cohort that was going to be mine to step into this next phase of my life.
Thank you for sharing. And the diversity that exists within Lumia, I feel for me is really like the crown jewel of our organization, because obviously we put together a professional coaching curriculum, but people learn so much from each other. And one of the things that we try to instill in folks is that your story is your gold. And I know that for you, honing in on that aspect of your own story took you to some places that you never anticipated. What happened after coach training for you?
So after coach training, so one of the things that was really amazing for me, and again, I couldn't have kind of scripted it, was, all these tools that I acquired and what I learned about myself. So yes, I was learning to be a coach, but I was also kind of learning about myself throughout the process. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we do in Lumia, for the listeners, obviously, this know-how, is the peer coaching, right? So working with our peers and being coached. So although I had already been working with a coach, this kind of beautiful capacity of being coached by other people who were on a similar journey to me, it really enlightened me to connecting to a part of myself that I hadn't realized that I had, I guess, been hiding or I had buried a little bit. So just by a way of, a little bit of background, I realized that I've been carrying around this story of belonging. Right, that I worry that I don't belong. And what I'm learning as I have, conversations with other, hence the connection coach, right? Why I'm called to be a connection coach, is that I'm not alone in that. That's, it's not as unfamiliar, and people wouldn't see that about me if they, if you know me, you think, what are you talking about? I mean, my friends call me Sally Social. Like, I'm not shy. I didn't think I was introverted, but I actually am a little introverted. But I would always worry about kind of the, am I going to fit in? And then even if I am accepted, when people get to know the real me, are they going to stick around? Because I realized, kind of through all this work that I carried around that story of when people get to know the real me, they leave. And I know we're going to talk about the book a little bit later. What I started to really realize was that this, coaching, right? Because I know there are a lot of kind of opinions about, some people said to me, oh, you're going to be a life coach? Like, what does that even mean? And I couldn't even define it myself. And I didn't know if that was exactly what I was going to do. But what I knew was that I was acquiring skills and relationships, and connection and community. Like, I was just basking in all these amazing things that were coming out of this experience of saying yes to myself, saying yes to, you know, signing up for Lumia and seeing where it was going to take me.
You've recently published your first book, and this is a great spot to dive in. And when we first talked about your book and when I got my hands on it and started to really explore what you were up to, I was surprised at how vulnerable your story was and the deep, deep journey that you take your readers on. Because I think of you as a powerhouse executive. I think of you as, you know, Sally Social, as the person who lights up the room. And I think it's such a wonderful example of how each of us have these universes inside of us that are unexplored. And yet through true connection and true belonging, we get to excavate the pieces of ourselves that need attention, need healing, need to be held. And one of the things that you shared was that in coach training, it was probably the first experience that you had had of belonging. Let's use that as a kickoff. What did that do and how, and then take us on the story of your lifetime?
You know, because for those that might listen to this that have known me pre-coach training, they may be like, well, what do you mean you didn't feel like you belonged, right? I think it was more about allowing all the pieces of myself to be exposed, right? To, you know, in coach training, I tapped into a level of vulnerability that honestly, Noelle, I didn't even know I had the capacity to connect to. And so I think that opened for me a deeper sense of belonging that I had, you know, protected myself from. So my book is called From Survival to Safety. And it, you know, it is a story about my adoption, and I can share a little bit of that, you know, how that played into it. But it's also a story about this intentional growth that I started to experience. And, you know, now that it's been published for about a year, I'm like, oh, I should have come up with a different title. There's all these like, you know, titles that are catchy, but the title really personifies the journey, because what I realized was that I had been living in survival. Like I grew up in a, you know, pretty chaotic household, but it wasn't, you know, we were loved. We had a roof over our head. You know, we just, you know, we had the emotional battles of kind of like my parents' own limitations, if you will. And I, you know, one of the things I learned from MC McDonald's class, you know, about trauma was that, you know, there are little traumas and big traumas. And, you know, I kind of always felt like, well, nobody cares about my story. Like, people have it worse off. And that's something I was told a lot as a kid. What are you complaining about? You know, there are starving children. There are sick kids in the hospital. I'm like, oh, I can't be upset about this, right? Like I'm neither of those things, you know, thankfully. And so I kind of had this buildup of information that was given to me that said, this is the way you exist. And like, you only show people your strong parts. You don't show them your weak parts. Don't let anybody see you cry. You know, those things were just not, I was not given any capacity to learn that being vulnerable in the right environments could be, I mean, amazing. Like, you know, like could provide breakthrough experiences. And so when I talk about this sense of belonging and coach training, it was that gift of being able to be truly seen. You know, there was a little bit of, these people don't know me, you know, like it's okay. We're all going through this together. You know, you and John and Pam created an incredibly safe environment, right? Where you bring, I remember when, you know, the classes that you taught, you would always start us off with a gratitude. And like, I remember feeling gratitude. I'm like, I didn't know gratitude was a feeling, right? Like, so just having that experience. And so I feel like it just, maybe it created some light in some areas where I had really like buried myself. And so there was some darkness, and, you know, you and the experience and the cohort and all the people that I came across during that part of the journey help me bring some light in there.
Okay. And this is a great opportunity to talk about like the science of coaching, right? Because you're sharing the student experience of the classroom, but the classroom spaces at Lumia are actually engineered for chemical response, right? So like when we share gratitudes, we get dopamine flowing, we get our endocrine system pumping. And what that does on a very foundational neurobiological level is it limits our limbic response. It limits the response of our emotional brain that houses fight or flight, and it allows us to access our neocortex and our logic center in different ways. And also, positive emotions are contagious. And so when we go around and we're vulnerable and we share and we look at strengths, we talk about what's good in our lives, we introduce gratitudes, we're creating what's called positivity resonance. It's an amplification of these emotions that allows us to tap into a deeper cut of genius. So essentially what we model in the classrooms is the same experience that coaches bring to clients that allow them to have the very types of breakthroughs that you experienced, you know, for yourself. Turning to your book, one of the things that I thought was really profound about the way that you tell your story is the juxtaposition of loneliness that was once held as a shame point, and then breaking free of that armor. Do you want to share a little bit about that particular transformation? Because I think this is something that so many people experience.
I want to share that when I first started writing the book, this was not the book that I went in to write. I was going to write a book about being a woman CEO in IT. And I'm still going to write that book. So that's a little bit of a forward-looking thing. But I had just taken a class that Deanna Moffat actually had offered called The Rewrite. And she's just written a book about that, right? And in that class, it was way more than a class. It was a course. It was an experience. I came back to that notion of, you know, when people get to know the real me, they leave. Mm. And this abandonment story that I had really anchored. And I didn't realize, because as you said earlier, you know, you saw me as this kind of like powerhouse. I mean, yeah, I'm a girl from Queens. Like, I'm not shy. I say what I got to say. People know me as direct. And I'm always like doing something or being like, you know, engaged in something and with usually with other people. But I didn't realize that how deep this abandonment story ran for me and how afraid I was. You know, you mentioned the word armor. I had really created this, you know, these levels of armor, and mine looked like avoidance, busyness, you know, kind of operating on autopilot, not really questioning things, a little bit of people pleasing, you know, some perfectionism, right? So those are all my layers of armor. And I had been talking to a friend who is adopted. I mentioned that I'm adopted. And she had just recently connected with her biological family and her siblings. And I, in that moment, I just said, you know what? I really need to like look for my biological family. Like, this is a big, you mentioned shame. This is a big part of the shame of my story. Like, that original abandonment that happened for me as a baby. Like, why didn't my mother want me? Like, you know, I sort of made up stories in my head about, you know, the fact that she didn't want me. And I'm like, I'm going to do that. And I'm going to write a book about it. Mm-hmm. So because accountability is something I really thrive in. I do better when I've kind of got, you know, this level of accountability. And I thought it could be really helpful for me to be in an environment where I was being supported. Because this was it was scary. It was really scary, you know, to go down that, you know, it's called a rabbit hole, if you will, like to go back and, you know, because I could be rejected, that, you know, there's just a million things that could, you know, go through. And there was also the fear of my adoptive mom being hurt by the fact that I was going to look for my biological family. So there were all these layers of that journey. And what I realized, Noelle, you know, one of the things that kind of came up, I did find them, spoiler alert, but I won't tell the whole story. But there was a little bit of a reaction from my mother's side of the family. And I didn't get to meet them yet. I say yet because you never know what could happen. But I had a connection that knew my sister, and she was questioning, well, why now? Why is she looking now, like after all these years? And I really sat with that question. And now, because I had the tools and I had the support, you know, I could really go deep on this. Well, why now, right? Like, what is it, you know, because it's disruptive too, you know, emotionally, psychologically, my heart hurt in different times. And the answer was because I was ready. I had done so much work, right? And yet I knew that I was kind of at a point of being stuck in my own growth because I had unanswered questions. And while they were scary, and while that was more darkness I had to go into, if I didn't take the step, then I would just be making up stories, right? And I think for anybody who does any, you know, any level of kind of like self-evaluation, the stories we tell ourselves are typically always worse than the actual truth.
Yes. Always.
So I don't know if I hit on the loneliness piece specifically, but I think what I can say about that is that I didn't really, you know, lonely is not a word I would have typically used to describe, you know, how I was living, but I definitely think I created an aspect of loneliness in my life because of the fear of what would happen if I showed people the real me.
Yeah.
That they would leave, that they would not like me. And there are a bunch of stories in the book about why I had data that said this was true, because those things actually happened, right? And so I'm like, but look, it's true. And then on the vulnerability piece, I just want to mention, vulnerability is probably one of the most powerful things you can do for yourself. But it's so scary. And I think it's one of those things, like, it's kind of like you wouldn't give your ATM pin to just anybody, right? If you give it to anybody, right? Or something that you like, you protect and guard. Well, vulnerability, I put that kind of in that same scenario. Like, it is precious when shared in the right hands with the right people who are in their own space of being able to receive vulnerability. Because it can be scary for the recipient as well, right?
It is. And this is, you know, this is the crux of your work right now. So, you know, looking at the book, looking at the speaking engagements that you give, looking at the work you do in corporate spaces, and the connection that I'm building, you know, between loneliness, vulnerability, your experience, understanding the pieces of yourself, is that none of these things happen magically overnight. And truly, we're looking at how the experience of belonging, which is essentially what coach practitioners bring to their clients, whether their client is a person, a couple, a family, a leadership team, an organization, a community, a nation, coaches bring belonging alongside interpersonal skills. And when you have that in coach training, you get both, you get to experience both pieces. And when I look out into the world, you know, we're experiencing an epidemic of loneliness and an epidemic of disconnection right now. And I think that most people look at the world with their noses pressed up against the glass, wishing that they could be in a space of belonging, and they perceive that that space exists outside of themselves. But the reality, and the reality of what you're sharing, is that the journey actually starts from within. And so with the art and science of coaching, the reason that we ask questions, the reason that we have a non-judgmental stance, is to draw out of someone their readiness to engage with themselves, to engage with others. And it's really an opening of letting the rest of the world in versus trying to break through some barrier. How does my assessment land for you with your experience?
I think it's so beautifully said. When I was working on the exercise of considering my branding, I knew that intentionality, right? So I have this kind of signature approach of helping people move from autopilot to intentionally connected, right? And it's, you know, connected, you can fill in the blank, right? Connected to their life, connected to their work. But for me, you know, at the top of the stack is connected to themselves.
Yeah.
Right. And one of the chapter titles that I wanted in the book, but we just didn't work out with the flow. But it was a story that I wrote, Connection is an Inside Job.
Yeah.
This concept of connection, right? We want to be connected. And, you know, you touched on it, right? Workforces are distributed. Many people are working from home. You know, that, and even like if their families are there, like there's, you know, we've just had this kind of like roller coaster of, you know, our life being kind of shuffled around, too much time together with the family, everybody kind of trapped inside and not able to go anywhere. And then, we kind of like this, we kind of enjoy this. Teams, you know, corporate teams trying to connect with each other, you know, over video as we're doing, right? And it's beautiful in a lot of ways because we can create connections, you know, no matter where we are in the world. But there's this kind of capacity to look at places in your life where maybe autopilot was at a very high volume, right? Because you've got space in different places. And so, yes, I really appreciate the way you described it. And it is something that I feel really passionate about, this concept of being intentionally connected.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is a great segue into the work that you do as a coach and a topic that I am deeply passionate about, which is helping people to bridge the divide between each other. So honing in on belonging and connection and the work that you do as a coach, you know, when we think about how and where people want to belong, you know, you hit on them. They want to belong at home. I hear so many parents say, you know, my teenagers don't need me. They want to belong in different social situations. They want to belong, at work. So what keeps your clients up at night and what do you support them with?
So building on this concept of, you know, moving from autopilot to intentionally connected, it's usually somewhere that they feel stuck. And I'm going to let you in on a little secret. Not all of the time, but many times people don't even have the privilege or the, you know, they don't have the gift of recognizing that they're stuck somewhere because they're literally just going through the motions of their days, right? Everybody is super busy. You know, there's so much going on, especially, you know, if you're a parent and you're, you know, and we, my generation is, what do they call it? The sandwich generation, right? Where you've got kids, but then aging parents and, you know, work responsibilities, everybody's doing more with less. So there are all these components, you know, distractions, if you will, that can kind of keep you disconnected from really rising some of these things to the top of the, you know, of your like respective to-do list, if you will, or your pile. But there are things like, you know, am I going to get the promotion? You know, what can I do to get this promotion at work? Or it could be something like, why isn't my boss, you know, why isn't my boss supporting me or available or recognizing my work? You know, am I going to find love? Right? Is love for me? You know, I have a client who's, you know, divorced and said, I don't know if that part of my life is over. You know, I have another client who says, who's never been married and says, you know what? I want to bring life. I want to bring love into my life and recognizes that, you know, she is sort of like avoided that. Those were the hidden parts of her. because of family dynamics, mm-hmm. right? Can I start a business? Is that something I really can do, right? Like I have clients that have this idea, but they just keep working for someone else because whatever reason, not good enough, scared of not making the money, needs to support the family, right? But there's an area of, typically there's an area of something stuck, right? But you know, you're just, you've got so much going on. As I said, mine was avoidance, right? I was so busy that I couldn't think about what wasn't really feeling fulfilling in my life, you know? And sometimes we think that feels like a privilege. Like, you know, on paper, everything looks great. So who am I to question the status quo?
Oh my God. I've talked about this a lot. I've had this experience a lot where, and you have had a similar experience, female CEO, right? You're at a point in your life, maybe it's your late 40s, maybe it's your early 50s, where you're supposed to be on the top of the world. And guess what? It sucks. And you're looking around like, how the hell did this situation end up feeling the way that it does? And the key word for me is feeling, because that's something that we all have the capacity to manipulate within the framework of all the situations that we have: family, friends, love, work. And you're so right. It's an inside job. Maybe that can be the title of your next book, you know?
Yeah.
I like where this is going. Yeah. And so this is, you know, it isn't just about kind of the external stuff. It's about how we relate to the external stuff. And I know that beyond your individual client work, which thank you for doing. Your clients are so lucky to have you as an ally. I can't imagine what it's like to have Amory riding shotgun in my life. That would be awesome. Is you also are breaking the mold in terms of corporate presentations around this work. What are you bringing into corporations that you've never seen before? I've never seen it before. What are you doing?
Well, what I'm doing is I'm talking about emotions in the workplace. I literally said to a gentleman who owns an IT company, and I was talking about, you know, it was a presentation about intentional connection in your business, right? And you know, what does that look like? And we were talking about what happens when like an employee is emotional. And this particular gentleman said, well, you know, except for when they cry or something to that effect. And I said, oh, no, wait a second. I said, I cry all the time. You know, I do. And if you read the book, there's a little bit of a story about how my mom used to call me pissy eyes when I was a kid. I can say that with a smile now. I've worked through it. But it was because she was so fearful of my tears. And, you know, she wanted me to be strong because, she thought those tears would represent weakness. And so I typically know when it's coming, so I can sort of let somebody know. So I'll be like, there are some tears on the bridge here. So if you're uncomfortable, you might want to like leave the room, because, you know, but tears for me, sometimes they're frustration. Sometimes they're passion. Like I'm just so passionate about something. Sometimes they're joy, mm-hmm. right? They're not always sadness. And so what I was trying to impart to this group, and I'm not an expert, you know, on emotions, just my own, right? And I'm not a psychologist, but, you know, I did lead a team for 20 years and I know that some of my best leadership moments was when I allowed my team to show me their emotions, to express what they were feeling, to let out the frustration, you know, of maybe a client that, you know, was just really difficult to deal with. And sometimes it was situations at home. You know, I had men who worked for me who would come and say, you know, I've got this thing going on at home and I don't know how to deal with it. Like, can we talk about it? And I, like, for me, those moments are such blessings, because one, they trusted me enough to bring that to me. And nobody can ever say never, but I worked in earnest to do my best to not let that like affect my view of them in the workplace. Sometimes I knew like work could be slipping and there would be moments where it'd be like, okay, we'd have to have a conversation about it. But I would not make a snap judgment to say, oh, well, this is happening because I know they have this going on at home. Because that's why employees are nervous to be vulnerable.
Absolutely. And this is one of the issues of our time is the emotional experience that everyone is having is relentless right now. Relentless, whether it's geopolitical, climate grief, professional upheaval, personal upheaval, isolation due to tech adoption, the world changing around us. Over 50 countries in the world right now are about to have a very big, impactful national elections right now. And what people are genuinely looking for is peace. Peace. And we have to be at home and we have to be at work and we are the same whole person wherever we exist. And so being able to bring this into corporate spaces and begin conditioning people to the fact that emotions exist is really brave work. And what I love about the work that you do and the presentations that you give is, you know, you and I can sit here and have a casual conversation about feelings. We can break out a feelings wheel and name our feelings. But a lot of what you do is really grounded in hardcore economic research, best practices, empirically validated literature. And we're talking about really big giant themes like the fourth and fifth industrial revolution and what's going to be required of us as a society in order to move through the choppy waves of the next, what do you think, 5 years?
So I recently was asked to do a presentation. I do some content for a women's group inside one of the communities that I work with in Ingram Micro. And I was asked to do a presentation on skills development. Yeah. And so I started to do some research of like, okay, what am I going to do? And I went down this path of the industrial revolutions and how, you know, they have obviously changed the way we operate, right? Brought, you know, enhancements to agriculture and machinery and manufacturing. And then I kind of landed on this industrial revolution 4.0. which is what we're in now. It's, you know, bringing the machines, right? The advent of machines. So smartphones, you know, mobile phones, listening devices, you know, like Google Home, you know, I can't say her name because she's here, but, you know, the other one, all of those types of things, right? Just this automation, smart homes, all of that. And now this, the fifth industrial revolution, which, according to the World Economic Forum, we're kind of, you know, stepping into, but it hasn't been fully kind of adopted yet. But it's where, you know, the machines, you know, the automation is going to take over some of the jobs that humans are doing, which means there's going to be this whole need for reskilling. Yeah. Right. There's also this pocket of, well, how do the humans and the machines work together? Right. Because now is from a leadership standpoint, you're going to have technology, and we've had this, but not to this level, Noelle, not to the adoption level of where it's going to be this kind of cohesive and collaborative delivery of services and products and out, you know, outputs that are delivered by humans and machines.
Yeah. When we were talking, you blew my mind when you told me that the World Economic Forum was calling for human skill sets to be able to work with machines. So if I'm understanding this, we have the fifth industrial revolution coming. This is no secret. This is no surprise. If you wake up and you read the news every other week, there's a new advancement in AI. We're seeing a lot taking place in terms of manufacturing. Like things are changing and moving so rapidly. It is my perception that the bulk of the world is not aware of how fast this thing is moving. And what my own observation has been is that if we're, and a question that a lot of coaches have for me is, what does this mean for us as coaches? You know, what does this mean? Is our own industry going to be, you know, overtaken? And fundamentally and philosophically, in alignment with everything that we've been talking about the work being an inside job and the vital aspects of connection and the vital aspects of feeling and processing emotions, as we move into the future, our very core human skills are going to be the dominant skills that we need to navigate the very complex changing landscape from machinery to climate to mass migration. And this looks like empathy, emotional intelligence, creativity, technological literacy, being adaptive, being flexible, being able to communicate and work with other people. And these are soft skills, you know, and yet here we go. What do you see?
So I was kind of blown away at that as well. So what I did was I looked at, I just kind of was curious, well, what is the World Economic Forum name as like the top 10 skills? Because as we look at the workforce, right, they're talking about reskilling, cross-skilling, and upskilling, right? Those are kind of three capacities, and there's different variances, right? Some people are going to need to learn things in their existing jobs. You know, some of it's going to be learn things in jobs that you're not doing yet. And then some of it is learning, you know, whole new skills, right? And so I think top of the charts from like 2015 and 2020 was like ability to solve like complex problem solving, multidisciplinary stuff. Creativity was on the list, but was like number 10. And nowhere was there anything like empathy or self-awareness. I think there was active listening. And then there was a list for 2023. And the 2023 list, it was now called analytical thinking, was number one on the list, which I thought was interesting because it's that really is now taking it down to the human aspect, right? The ability to analyze not only what the data says, this is how I interpret it anyway, right? This is my personal interpretation. Analyze not only what the data says, but also what the human impact is going to be. Mm. How is this going to be received?
Yeah.
Right? How are people going to integrate it? You know, if I'm delivering a service out into the marketplace, how am I going to connect with my audience, right? Connect with my, you know, the people that are going to be consuming whatever it is that I have to offer, you know, into their hemisphere. So I thought that was really interesting. And then I think self-awareness was like number three. And I thought that, I think it was self-awareness and motivation. I didn't quite understand the pairing, but I guess it's more understanding from a point of self, right? Again, coming to that inside job of what motivates you. Because from a leadership perspective, motivating employees, I think is probably, and I don't have a specific stat to, you know, cite here, but I know as a leader, like that was one of the things that kept me up at night. Yeah. How do I motivate my employees? How do I keep them connected to my culture, my business? There, you know, there's so many competing things out there. Now people can work anywhere. Why are they going to want to stay and work for me? Why are they going to want to do a good job for me, a great job for me? Right. So understanding what motivates people and having that self-awareness to be able to lead and manage them in that capacity and motivation. And then you mentioned emotional intelligence, right? Bringing EQ into the conversation. That was really described as the ability to understand your own emotions and then the emotions of others and how that plays into, you know, what you're delivering. And I think I could say in my industry, because I've been in it for 30 years, there's a lot of yelling sometimes, right? And so, and by the way, and I tell the guys this all the time, I'm like, yelling is emotional, just so you know. So if you think you're not being emotional, you're being emotional. And it's okay, by the way, you're frustrated. But how about we really try to tap into what's behind that frustration, right? What's behind that anger, right? You know, because we all know anger is a secondary emotion. That's a whole different topic, right? But so I was really, honestly, Noelle, I was excited and a little bit relieved to see these attributes. Oh, and creativity moved up the list, I think, to like number two.
Yeah.
Right? Because we are going to need to get creative in the products that we create, right? And what we, you know, there's so much noise. There's a saturation of consumption, right? So how do you shine? Like, how does your light shine in that capacity when there's all these things competing for people's attention?
Oh, yeah. And what I think what excites me is that all of the skills that we're talking about, this is what coaches do. They draw the creativity out of people. They help them to understand how to regulate their emotions and place them. They help them understand what motivates me, what are my strengths, what are my talents. And so there has never been a discipline like coaching that is truly better suited for what's about to happen in our time. And looking at you, oh my God, just the journey that we've taken on this podcast from, you know, your very first engagement with a piece of content from a coach, John, through coach training, experiencing belonging, to this beautiful journey of writing your book, of understanding your interior, of finding your family. And now, you know, taking the culmination of this work and beating down the doors in corporate spaces where these conversations have never been had before. Amory, hats off. Hats off to you. Bravo. Bravo. Whenever I get to interview Lumia alums, I'm so humbled and grateful by the power that comes through our doors and the ripples that are created. So, if you were to share a piece of advice with somebody who is listening to this and saying, how can I become a coach? I don't know if I have what it takes. What would you say?
I would say, don't worry about that yet, right? Like, take the first step. Everything, you know, we tend to think about where we're trying to get to,
yeah,
as opposed to how we want to get there, right? Or just what we want to do next, right? And, you know, Noelle, I want to say thank you for your accolades. And I have a long way to go on this journey of, you know, taking this messaging into corporate. And there are days when I feel like nobody's listening, or it's not gonna work. And so, but I keep going, because it took me a very long time to tap into what I felt truly passionate about. And having found it, I don't want to let go of it. So while I was searching for one thing, you know, my family and my interior, I like the way you said that, you know, understanding my roots, I found something completely different. Mm. But it's so connected to me on a cellular level that I feel really grateful for that. And so if you're listening to this and you want to take that first step toward coaching, just take the first step. Where it's going to bring you is probably far more exciting and enticing than you can even imagine today. And so sometimes we tend to dream of what we know, and it can be so much more expansive than that. So if you're thinking about it, then absolutely you have what it takes, because the thought is there, right?
The seed is planted. The
yes.
seed is planted. And I just want to echo, you know, I know what it's like to go into spaces where you feel like no one's listening, and your family at Lumia is listening. And we are having this conversation. We are publishing this work. We are talking about it. You are supported. You're part of an organization of thousands of change makers, and we have your back. So let's all keep going.
Thank you. Thank you for that, Noelle. It's really a beautiful reminder. I'm not alone, and no. I'm not sitting in loneliness. I am going for it and embracing the connections because I'm so grateful for them.
Yes. Anne-Marie, it was so great to have you. We'll do it again. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Noelle. It has been a pleasure.
Lumia is ready to equip you with the tools, training, and community you will need to reach your goals. If you're ready to build a unique coaching business on your own terms while making an impact on the world at large, Lumia is the next bold step in your coaching journey. That's lumiacoaching.com/everything.
And hey, if you're waiting for a sign, this is it.